Welcome into a new season of the NHL at the Rink podcast debut episode. Sean, are you ready? Every Wednesday, get ready for this podcast. Are you ready?
I was born ready, Dan. I am so ready. This is going to be the best year yet. We got all kinds of plans. We're going to make it even better than it's been.
I think so.
High bar.
Listen, and I think we're starting off. Yeah, I think we're setting the bar really high, maybe even too high. I don't know if we're going to be able to match it. Eddie Olczyk, the great Eddie Olczyk, will be joining us shortly. We go around the league with Eddie. He will be a week from today, actually. He will be in Vegas for the Los Angeles Kings and Vegas Golden Knights. Mitch Marner's debut on TNT and HBO Max, part of a doubleheader that night. They also got the Boston Bruins and Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals. Listen, ESPN starts it out, Sean, on Tuesday with a triple header, Chicago, Florida, Pittsburgh, and the Rangers, the Mike Sullivan Bowl, if you will. I don't think we'll call it that. And then Colorado and the LA Kings to close it out. So we start with a bang. We're starting with a bang with Eddie Olczyk. And the Minnesota Wild, Sean, are starting off with a huge bang, in a historic bang, with the signing of Kirill Kaprizov, 8 years, $136 million, $17 million AAV. Dude's getting $40 million more than Mikko Rantanen and Mitch Marner. Like, that's where we're going, Sean. That's where the market's going.
It is where the market's going, and I think Mitch Marner and Mikko Rantanen woke up this morning and might have had a little buyer's remorse. Look, nobody knew that it was going to go this far. And I think that Kirill Kaprizov is a special case, right? Minnesota needed to sign this player. They can't replace him. They can't go into free agency and replace him. They're not a team that dabbles in free agency. They haven't been since Parise and Suter, and those were special cases. They're not a destination. Right, a free agency has proven that over the course of time. So, you know, they're not one of those teams that loses somebody and says, oh, well, next year we'll just buy the best free agent there is. So I think there's a little bit of an overpay there. And I think they knew they were going to have to overpay. They were basically going against themselves. They said nobody else could pay Kaprizov what they were going to pay him. And they ended up proving it. Nobody else was going to pay Kaprizov that. So, but it does reset the market. And there's a lot of players that are coming up soon. Eichel being one, Jack Eichel in Vegas. You know, I think Connor McDavid's a little bit different. He's eligible. Kempe, all those players. And now they're looking at that number. I don't know that they're going to get it, but it changes the rubric for sure. I mean, that's maybe the biggest cap hit, percentage of cap hit that's ever been taken out of a team by one player.
Yeah. Well, McDavid will get it. If he wants it, he'll get it. That's the question.
Yeah. That's why I said McDavid's different.
Yeah.
Because he may not want it. Just like Sid didn't want it back in the day.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a decision the player is making. So if Connor McDavid makes a decision to not take as much as Kirill Kaprizov, I think Connor McDavid eventually will sign a shorter term deal with the Edmonton Oilers. I don't think it's going to be an 8-year deal. But if he makes a personal decision to take less AAV than Kaprizov got, that's a personal decision that he has made, and I don't argue with him on that. That's what Sidney Crosby has done for years with the Pittsburgh Penguins. But Connor McDavid, but the cap going up, right? It's just part of the cap going up. These high-end guys who are coming up at the right time, McDavid, Eichel, Cale Makar next season, they have the ability to reset the market each time, to top each other each time. And it's not necessarily, to me, about the dollars that we're looking at. It's about the percentage of the cap. And as the cap goes up, the AAV goes up based on the percentages of it, if that's the direction that they want to go. So, yes, this resets the market, if you will. I don't know, to be honest with you, if Rantanen and Marner have buyer's remorse necessarily. I think they got market value. I think Kaprizov, like you talked about, is a special case, gets that. And it's also different with teams like Dallas, with teams like Vegas, they have other guys too that are higher end guys as well that are also getting paid. Colorado is in that same boat when Makar comes up. So they're in a different position, I think, than Minnesota was. Kaprizov's a unicorn there in the every positive way. McDavid is that way too, even though Draisaitl is there. McDavid is that guy, and if he wants it, he'll get it. That's just a simple fact.
Yeah, no, for sure. I look, that's almost 18% of the cap if I'm doing my math right, and my math is horrendous. You can only take 20. So, but I do think that when you look at the cap, right, it's been plotted out for the next couple of years, which is something that's never happened before. So people kind of understand what's going to happen. And that's just a guesstimate. Those numbers could be higher, yep. Right? And so you could be looking in a couple of years where the cap's even bigger than they think it's going to be. And then the numbers don't look quite as harsh or quite as big, whatever you want to call it. But all I could think about last night, Dan, before we get to Eddie Olczyk, is what do you do with $17 million? I started in this business. My first year in this business, I made $16,000. And I thought I was the richest human being that ever lived. Wow. Because I had my own money. And at Kaprizov's age, I think I was making $30,000 a year. And again, happy as could be. $17 million? I have no idea what you do with that.
Well, when you have that, you don't live the way you did on 30, that's for sure. So, or the way I did on 30, that's for sure, or anybody. But listen, all right, he's got to pay his agent a little bit, right? So, comes out. Hey, there's taxes, a lot of taxes associated with that as well. So, I mean, $17 million drops, let's say, to 12 per year. You know, I can live off of that too. Yeah, but you're listen, whatever he does with it, there's little doubt in my mind that Kirill Kaprizov, for the value he brings to the Minnesota Wild, is worth that percentage of the salary cap. This team, last season, he played half the season, Sean. They, 41 games in, 41 games out. They had 25 wins and 53 points with him in the lineup. They had 20 wins and 44 points without him in the lineup. He plays the full season. They finish in the top three in the division, maybe. And it could be a different thing for the Minnesota Wild. And now they have the cost certainty with Kirill Kaprizov. And they don't have the Parisian suitor contracts weighing them down anymore, those buyouts. Boldy is on his way up. Faber is on his way up. Rossi is on his way up. Gustafson's on his way up. And they've got a few more coming too. I like the direction of the Minnesota Wild, Sean. I really do. And with the cost certainty of Kirill Kaprizov, I think it helps everything else that Billy Guerin's going to try to do there as the general manager.
No, yeah, he was vital. He was vital. You couldn't survive not having him on the ice, PR-wise, everything. He's the biggest superstar that franchise has ever had. He's their Alex Ovechkin.
Yep.
They're going to build around him for the rest of his career.
As they should. The only difference is that he's not a center. He's a winger. And that makes a little bit of a difference, but he's just so valuable. But we talked about this with Eddie Olczyk. We talked about Connor McDavid with Eddie Olczyk. Alex Barkov, the tough injury that he has with the Florida Panthers. We talked about that with Eddie Olczyk and so many other things. And I love the fact that we're opening this season up with one of the best in the business. So here is our interview with the great Eddie Olczyk of TNT. Eddie, thanks so much for joining us on our first episode back for the new season. You are our first guest of the new season. Honored, I would imagine. Right?
Well, first off, I think that's a bunch of bullshit, to be honest with you. I think somebody canceled on you, and I got the call at 3 o'clock this morning Pacific, and Bob Bender said, you know, hey, can you jump on with Dan and Sean? And I felt like I was a utility player pretty much my whole career, so I'll do that in the post playing career and now the broadcasting. So it's good to be with you, and we are right around the corner for the start of the season. So lots to discuss, and looking forward to the start of the season. So seriously, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And so it was going to be Boosh.
I thought you were going to say it was going to be Pierre. That's what I thought.
We won't go there. I mean, I think you're giving us a little too much credit for planning ahead as well. So let's not do that. All right, listen, let's dive right in. The Florida Panthers going for the three-peat, I should say, Edzo. And, you know, now they're dealing with, you know, listen, it's not all rosy, right? I mean, Barkov out for the season, Tkachuk out for several months. Paul Maurice said it, there's no replacing Barkov. Yeah. Is there any benefit to the fact if you're going to lose a player like Barkov, at least you lose him before the start of the season so you can at least adjust?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a tough hand to play, but everybody goes through it, as you both know, and you're right. I mean, Mo handled it extremely well. I mean, he's been around the block a few thousand times, so it's not what you say, but it's how you say it. And I think he's sending a message to everybody outside of the locker room is like, look, you know, let's be honest here. You're right. You're not going to replace a guy like Sasha Barkov, but it is going to open up the door for some other players to take a much larger role, and Florida will be able to get a chance to see if these guys are able to do that. And then whenever Barkov is ready to come back and Matthew coming back, you know, that for them is they just want to stay above water. They want to, you know, they want to be obviously in the playoffs, but, you know, winning the division or finishing second or third, that just get in. I think that I would assume that would be the mindset, and they're going to be a very good team even without, you know, their two top players up front. I mean, let's call it what it is. So you're going to need other guys to step up, and who those guys will be, we'll get a pretty good look at the start of the season to see who's going to eat up those minutes by Barkov, right? Matchups, faceoffs, power play, killing the penalties. You know, he touches every part of your game. So it's tough, but look at teams. All teams have injuries. All teams have injuries to stars. Unfortunately for Florida, trying to do something that we haven't seen since the 80s of going to four straight Stanley Cups and looking for, you know, three in a row. It's a daunting task, but let's see where they are. And I wouldn't count them out to give themselves a chance, regardless of who's in the lineup, because they've proven to be, you know, a real team. Yeah, they have some stars, but they do it as a team. And, you know, you're going to put a lot more pressure on some other guys that maybe weren't ready for it. But, hey, here's your opportunity, and you never know where it's going to take some young player for Florida.
I mean, one of those guys is going to be Anton Lundell, and I'm curious what you think. We've seen flashes of him in the playoffs and in Four Nations, but I'm wondering what you think his ceiling is. And in a way, you know, this is almost a sneak preview of what Florida's wanted for a long time. He's the heir apparent to that role.
Yeah, you know, I think you put Lostarinen in there too. I mean, you have guys that can play wing, can play center, and take that next step. And, you know, I think at times you saw the domination, that to be able to have, you know, a shift after shift and be a difference maker. And the way that Paul Maurice coaches too is, you know, he's not afraid to give guys responsibility and play head-to-head, whether it was in the Toronto series of, you know, maybe going up against, you know, Matthews at certain times. So I think for those two players, they're going to get ample opportunity and, you know, probably get some more touches, you know, at key situations offensively, because when the game's on the line or, you know, you need something, you know that Barkov's going to be over the boards every single time. So, you know, you could take those two guys and sit there and say, yeah, they're, you know, that they're going to get those reps and they're going to get those touches. And still, I think, you know, talking to Paul Maurice during the playoffs the last couple of years is that, you know, he kind of feels like both those guys have the potential. These are my words, not his, but me, you know, breaking down coach speak. It's, you know, I think there's still some more there. Now, how much more is there? Well, here's a perfect time to see how much those guys have when you lose, you know, arguably, you know, one of the top two center icemen in the entire National Hockey League.
Let's go to the team that they've beaten the last 2 years in the Stanley Cup final. Edzo, do you think the McDavid contract situation, if it extends into the regular season, does that hang over the Oilers? Does it hang over McDavid?
Well, I don't think it's going to hang over Connor McDavid, because he's just a different, you know, he breathes different air. So I don't think it's going to affect him one bit. And as a hockey guy and a hockey fan, I think it would be really interesting theater to see him just, you know, just to play it out. You know, look at, there's advantages, there's disadvantages. I mean, being a former player and standing behind the bench at Pittsburgh for a couple of years, it can certainly see it from both sides. And, you know, a lot of speculation on, you know, is he going to sign a, you know, a shorter term deal? Now, everybody's definition of shorter term, when I think of short term, I'm thinking 1 or 2 years. I'm not thinking three. I'm not. Now, some people seem to say when they say short term, they're thinking 3 years. But I would think that if he does sign a short term deal, I think it would be for a couple of years, no more than two. But look, at the end of the day, he's holding the cards and he can play it out, or he can, you know, sign and put everything at ease and everybody in Edmonton. And, you know, but I don't think it'll affect him. I don't think it'll affect the team. I think everybody understands. I think it's a way different animal now than it's ever been before. And I think players, they all understand and respect each other's business when it comes to contracts. I think it's a lot different now than it was. I'm just going to go back to my era between 1984 and 2000. I mean, there was pressure. I mean, you were getting peer pressure. You were getting pressure from the Players Association. I'm not saying that there isn't pressure from the Players Association. I'm not saying that at all. But it's just, it's much different now, where players are sitting there saying, look, I'm going to make the decision. Nobody, you know, I don't say guys are afraid to, you know, put pressure on guys, but, you know, I think guys that have good relationships and are friends with guys are certainly going to give their opinion to them regardless of what it is. So I'm not sure how it plays out, but I think for the theater, I think it would be pretty damn interesting to see him to play it out and see how it all works out for not only Connor McDavid, but obviously the Edmonton Oilers. To me, it would be, I think the next step to that would be, what happens if he doesn't sign the extension? You know, do the Oilers approach Connor McDavid at some point and go, look, like, you know, we'd like to know, are you going to, and look, again, he holds all the cards, but I think you have to go. I'd be shocked if Edmonton hasn't gone down that road. Hasn't gone down that road yet, because I think that you need to be able to be prepared. Now, whether or not Connor McDavid or any other player that's in that situation is willing to play nice in a sandbox, like I go back to what Mitch Marner did in Toronto. Everybody, I think most people thought he was going to be in Vegas. I was a little bit surprised that he did do a sign and trade. We know why he did the sign and trade, for the business and the money and everything. But, you know, Toronto got a pretty damn good player in Nick Waugh out of that deal. Now, I'm not saying that they wouldn't have got Nick Waugh at some point or whatever. But my point is that the dynamic from the team and management side is, if you're starting to get the sense is that any player, let's just talk about, you know, the top of the, you know, the top of the pyramid for players in the league, is, and we saw it last year with Colorado and Rantanen, right? And they were very proactive and they did what they did, and we know now he's in Dallas. So that'll be interesting to see how that is playing out, how it will play out if indeed Connor decides to play it out.
Recent news with Kaprizov signing his new deal. Does that impact Connor at all? You were talking a little bit about the pressure and the finances and everything else. It's hard to deviate too far from that paycheck.
Well, I like it. That's a lot of powder for Kirill the Thrill. I mean, without a doubt. But look at Connor McDavid. If he chooses to, and again, we know the salary cap is after being dormant for a long time, it is, you know, slowly moving up, and we know what the market is. And there is the philosophy where, you know, maybe some of these young players, you know, star players, top of the pyramid players, Kaprizov certainly there, we know Connor McDavid at the very top, are they going to go the NBA route, where they're going to go, you know what, I'll just give me a 2-year deal, and I'll take my, you know, Connor should be the highest paid. Now, whether or not he can do that in Edmonton, you know, as far as of keeping a, you know, a very good team and with all the big money that they have, unless they can move out a contract, you know, he should be at the top. He should be, I look at, I mean, Would he go to say, look at whatever the cap is, just use an easy number, 100 million, and go, okay, well, 20% of the cap is 20 million. That's what I want. I mean, they have no choice but to accommodate a player like that. So, but it comes down to, you know, what is most important to each individual player and how much are you willing to, you know, eat and take up of the cap and what kind of team are you going to be able to have around you if you do start making into that, you know, 16, 17, 18, $19 million range. And it's going that way. And you look at Cale Makar is going to be the next guy if things work out here in the next year where his contract's up, not this year, but next year. And I believe in Colorado. And, you know, he has every right to be. If Connor McDavid is just, you know, if the comparables are, take forward defenseman out. I mean, he's as important as a player there is in the league. If Connor McDavid is, you know, a million or 2 million above Kaprizov, and Colorado feels like that's a good number for Cale Makar, well, then Cale Makar can go ahead and ask for, you know, 16 or 17. And when Nathan MacKinnon comes up in a couple of years, then, you know, all of a sudden you're just playing that leapfrog game. So, the market has certainly been reset now, and we'll see what ends up happening with some of these premier players moving forward.
I mean, you brought up Mitch Marner. He's a premier player. Yeah. He got a new deal in Vegas. By the way, Kaprizov's making $40 million more than Marner's deal. That's crazy, but it's where it's going, and I get it, and I totally am great for Kaprizov. But Marner in Vegas, how do you see that fit with Mitch in Vegas right now? And if, especially if he's a fit with Jack Eichel on the same
board. I don't think there's any doubt he can be a fit with Jack because he's the ultimate type of center iceman where he can play with any kind of winger. He can play with a guy that can score or a guy that can distribute. And he just happens to have a guy like Mitch Marner who can do a little bit of everything. And Jack's contract is up too, right? So now, So here's another situation where you sit there and go, well, wow, you know, like, well, where is the individual player willing to go within the spectrum of a team payroll and saying, like, you know, I really love it here, which he does. And, you know, can I get to this number and we can still field a very competitive team? But I think that they can be dynamic. I saw him play one game, I think maybe about 6-7 days ago, and they seemed to have it on a string and knew, kind of seemed to be very comfortable with knowing where each guy is going to be. And, you know, you're going to have to account for them. There's no doubt. I mean, both players, Danny, as you know, they have the hockey sense and the hockey IQ to be able to play with any type of player in any situation. And I think he's going to have a boatload of success in Vegas. Actually, we're doing myself, Kenny Albert, and the guy that I filled in for here on your show today on your podcast, Brian Boucher. We will be in Vegas opening night on TNT, the second half of the doubleheader. We will be there, and looking forward to the LA Kings and the Vegas Golden Knights, and looking forward to seeing Mitch and Jack and two teams that I think a lot of people feel I do that have a chance to make a serious run. And I look back, it just makes me think about it with Mitch Marner in Toronto last year, and then mentioning the LA Kings. You think about both of those teams and both of those franchises. They had their respective opponents who ended up going to the Stanley Cup final, both over a barrel.
Yep.
Probably LA more so than Toronto. Up 2-0 in the series, both had leads in game threes, you know, just not able to get the job done. I think LA actually had a lead in game 4-2 to go home 3-1, and, you know, just a horrendous challenge. And all of a sudden, you know, it's over. I mean, let's just call it what it was. So I think, you know, a team like LA, and we saw the news with Anze Kopitar, who has been as class and has been professional and has been so clutch for the LA Kings that this will be his last season. I got to think that they're all in. It sounds like the people that I've spoken to, it sounds like LA is still trying to, you know, maneuver, not only handling the cap, but trying to figure out how they can maybe take another step here with maybe a player or two. I would be like, I think that they're all in with this being Kopi's last year. And he's been, I mean, he's a, you know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. We know that. He's had an unbelievable career. And I thought that they had a chance last year. Like, I thought that they really could make a real serious run. And obviously they weren't able to do that. So, but I think getting back to Mitch Marner, I think Mitch is going to do really well playing under Bruce Cassidy. He's going to play a lot. And if he does indeed play with Jack, and even if he doesn't play with Jack Eichel, they've got some pretty good players, you know, playing in so-called, you know, second line, you know, roles there with Wild Bill as a center iceman as well. And, you know, they've got some, you know, they've got some maneuverability on that team. And again, expectations for Vegas is to get back to where they were a couple of years ago.
Eddie, last one for me. I'm curious, you know, the Olympics are looming. The major teams are so deep now, right? The U.S. can skate two teams if they want to. Canada's always been able to do that. The Swedes and the Finns a little bit less, but there's intense competition for spots. How do you think that's going to translate into the first half of the season as far as players understanding that they need to treat this maybe a little more seriously than they might treat the first 2 months of a season?
That's a great debate and a great question, Sean. You know, there are some players, and there have been some players that have been very vocal on, you know, wanting to get off to a good start, not only for their team, but, you know, specifically about representing their country and getting noticed and whatever. I look at, I would feel very confident that the majority of the template is in place. Like, I think that they know what they're going to do. Now, you got to be prepared, because we saw what happened last year, specifically with Team USA. And you know, we know what happened during the tournament, where you got, you know, Harley coming in, you know, and you know, I mean, just so you got to understand is that they might have their line set and their team set, which I think that most countries probably have a pretty darn good idea if everything stays status quo. But all of a sudden you get one pothole, or you get one guy banged up or whatever, or maybe one of your role players is not playing very well and the type of team that you want to get, then, you know, you add to it. So I think our game is in an unbelievable place. Like, I really do. I think the National Hockey League is as high as it's been in a very, very long time, not only because our stars are obviously off the charts, but I think there are some really, really darn good players that maybe don't get the notoriety that maybe some of the other, you know, the big guys do. But I think the league is in an unbelievable place. And I think that anything that drives a athlete to be even better and to have that carrot that is hanging there of maybe representing their country. And look, I was lucky enough to play for Team USA, you know, before professionals were playing, at least for North American professionals, because, you know, the other countries that were at the Olympics back then, they were all being taken care of financially. But I was an amateur when I played in 1984. So to not have gotten a chance to play in the Olympics as a pro, certainly something that I'm very envious and jealous of Team USA. But I think that for these guys that have a chance, and there are a handful of guys, I think, in both countries, just say Canada and U.S., that know that, hey, I got a chance here. Like I'm within, you know, I'm on speed dial for Billy Guerin and Doug Armstrong, both for Team Canada and Team USA, respectively. So I think it's going to be just awesome to see how these guys handle it, how they play, have that carrot out in front of them. And I would like to think that you know what guys are, right? Like, I'm going to go back to the way that Team USA handled Kyle Connor in the last game of the Four Nations. Like, I was completely shocked that he did not play in the last game, knowing that Matthew Tkachuk was 50-50 to play. Let's just be nice. Okay, he was 50-50 to play the game. And if a guy's 50-50 and you know what he's dealing with, there's a pretty darn good chance that one hit, one overextension, he might not be available. Chris Kreider, he just wasn't high on the depth chart, and it didn't seem like the coaching staff and Mike Sullivan had a lot of confidence in him. All of a sudden, you know, you get an injury and you're not playing one guy because you don't have the confidence in him. Because look at the numbers are what they are. I mean, you see the shift, how many shifts that got hit.
Yeah.
So when you really dig into it, now all of a sudden you're playing in arguably the most important hockey game that we've seen in North America in a very long time. And you only, and you're down to 10 forwards for more than half the game. And you're playing against a team that's playing four lines. And, you know, so like Kyle Connor to me, like if he's dressed that night, he's the type of player, as you both know, and his numbers prove it out. Like he has the ability for one chance to put the puck in the back of the net. And all of a sudden you win a game or you win a medal or you win the gold medal. So I look at a guy like Kyle Connor, who a lot of people, considering how he was, and let's say it for what it was, he looked uncomfortable at times during the tournament, but I thought at times he was like, he's a game breaker. Like, I think that that's what he is. So a guy like Kyle Connor, he would be on my team. He should be on Team USA. He should be playing every game. I don't think he's a bubble guy. Now, when you look at how the tournament ended, it sure looks like that maybe if things stay status quo is that he ends up being a bubble guy, which that would not happen for me. So I think not only guys that played in that tournament, but guys that also were left off and then went to the camps and stuff, I think there are guys that are playing for a lot, even though those guys maybe were there. So I just thought that was an interesting dynamic that he did not play. Now, look at, I don't think he was banged up from the people that I've talked to. So if I'm wrong on that, then I get it. But Kyle Connor for me would absolutely 110% be on that starting lineup. And then, you know, obviously you see what happens from there, but it's going to be super competitive. And I think that the league will be better with a lot of these guys knowing that they got that carrot hanging with them, maybe having a chance to play for their country.
All right, Ed, so I got one more question for you, and then we'll let you go. There's two intriguing storylines with people that you know very well. Joel Quenneville's back. He's with the Anaheim Ducks. Jonathan Toews is back, and he's with the Winnipeg Jets. I don't know what kind of impact both will have. I think the Ducks can be a sneaky good team this year. I do. What kind of impact do you think they will have in their respective teams? Quenneville, obviously, the coach.
Sure.
Different than Jonathan Toews, but Toews is going in as the number two center right now.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm happy for both because I consider them both friends and always have been. And I'm happy for both of them because they're both where they want to be after, you know, a couple of long journeys individually. So, and they have obviously, you know, a lot of history together and, you know, maybe the greatest run of the Chicago Blackhawks. And when you look at this year being the 100-year anniversary of the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of reminiscing going on and celebrating, you know, under Danny Wirtz and the Chicago Blackhawks. So I think for Joel first, Danny, I think that they will be without question in knowing and having done Blackhawk games with Joel as the coach and followed him for a long, long time. I don't think there's any doubt is that they will be 10 to 15 points better. Now, where is that in the scale of making the playoffs? I don't know. Would I be surprised if they're not playing playoff meaningful opportunities come March into April? Yes, I would be. So, but I think that he will make a huge impact. He is going to help all of those young players on that team. I mean, you know exactly where you stand when you play for Joel Quenneville. He is very direct. It is this way. This is the way that we're going to play. And I think that he is going to have a very competitive team and they are going to have success. Now, is that making the playoffs? Time will tell. I think for Jonathan Toews and conversations that I've had with him over the last couple of years, I think that he's just in a great place mentally. He gets an opportunity to go home. I kind of tried to convince him to put on the number 16, but he wanted to stick with the, you know, with the old proper number there because he did wear 16 in the Olympics. And for people that may not know, I wore 16 in Winnipeg for almost the 6 years that I was in the peg. So, I'm happy for him. I think that he will help tremendously inside that room in practice, the way he carries himself. Now, when you haven't played in a long, long time, and you're an older guy, an older athlete. Now we see what LeBron James has been able to do. We saw what Tom Brady was able to do. It's going to be a battle for him, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of highs and lows. But I think that Scotty Arneal will understand and be able to watch and manage his workload and, you know, his practice time. And look at teams, and that's the one thing too, just with the schedule, there's not going to be a lot of practice time. So players, it's going to be pretty much, you know, play, rest, morning skate. That's where you do a lot of your teaching and then go from there. But I think for Jonathan Toews, I think it's going to be an unbelievable comeback for him to get a chance to play for his hometown team and make an impact on a team that a lot of people feel that, you know, do have the ability to, you know, to take that next step when you think about everything that they have. And, you know, we know the struggles of Connor Hellebuyck, you know, what has happened here in the last handful of playoffs. But, you know, they got a darn good team, and they're going to be, regardless of what happens and how long that Jonathan Toews is there, I promise you is that 5 years from now that you will have players that were there and players that were on the cusp of becoming Winnipeg Jets, is that they will mention Jonathan Toews in a way of saying that he had an impact with the way he carried himself and the things that he said and the way that he, you know, that he was a professional. I think that will be the long lasting impact, I believe, of Jonathan Toews. And look, if he can, I know what it's like to play in my hometown. I played 5 years for my hometown team in Chicago, and it was the greatest. I still, to this day, I'm disappointed I wasn't able to win a Stanley Cup in my hometown. But I know for Jonathan Toews, he's playing for, you know, one reason, and one reason only, is to help the Winnipeg Jets win a Stanley Cup. And I think that will rub off on everybody in Winnipeg, not only the team and the organization, but the fan base as well. So I'm excited to see how he looks and how the Winnipeg Jets receive Jonathan Toews.
I was just going to say, way better than Bush. Thank
way
you.
Way better.
And we're looking forward to the TNT broadcast this year.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me, guys. Keep up the great work. I always enjoy being on with you and listening to you guys. So we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Great stuff there from Eddie Olczyk. So happy we were able to get him on this, our first episode of the 2025-26 season. He also does great work with John Forslund on the Seattle Kraken local broadcast as well. So you can catch him there too. So Sean, we've laid it all out. We've covered all the big topics that are going on right now. And now we have to put ourselves out there for all of our listeners to rip us apart, because it's prediction time. And this is what you do. We do it. We do prediction time now, and we'll do it before the playoffs as well. So here we go. Do you want to start big, or should we start divisions? Do we go right to the Stanley Cup, or do we go how we're going to get to the Stanley Cup?
You got to build. Don't you know anything, yeah. Dan? You got to build the excitement. Has Bob Bender not taught you a single thing in the course of this podcast?
Correct. Taught me nothing. Yes. That's the I don't have to hesitate to answer.
I'm going to teach you something then. We need to build. We need to build the excitement.
Teach me who is going to finish first in the Metropolitan Division, and maybe a little, you know, second, third, if you want to go the distance, go to fourth. Teach me, Sean.
Carolina is going to win the division. I don't see any way to argue that. They are the deepest team. They're the most experienced team. They have everything they need to be dominant, and their game doesn't change. The game you see in game one is the game you see in game 15 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It just never wavers, and it's built to win. It just hasn't gotten over the hump, right? Everybody's like, well, their game has to change. It's really hard to win in the playoffs. The Carolina Hurricanes have been to 3 Eastern Conference Finals in the past 5 years. They've run into the Florida Panthers, who were an all-time team. What are you going to do? So I think they're clear heads and shoulders above everybody else in that division. I have New Jersey second, and here's a big surprise. Columbus third.
Okay. All right, so that's where we differ. I have Carolina first as well in the division. The additions of Ehlers, Nikolaj Ehlers, and Keandre Miller to add to what they already have in Carolina. It just makes perfect sense for them to be the team, and I agree with you, the consistency of it. They got to get it done in the playoffs, this, that, and the other. We're not talking about that right now. We're talking about how they get to the playoffs, and they will win the division. They're the best team in the division. I have New Jersey second, and I am really high this season, and we'll get there. I'll tell you exactly how high I am on the New Jersey Devils. Health is the big thing. And obviously getting Luke Hughes signed and getting him in, that's also very important. Health is huge. If they stay healthy, they're deep, they're talented, they're skilled, they're well-coached, they have good goaltending and a hunger. I like the New Jersey Devils a lot. I like Columbus. I don't love Columbus. I don't know how much I like Columbus. I think Washington finishes third in the division. I think there's a regression there from 111-point season last year, no question about it. We obviously agree on that, as you don't have them in the top three. But they're still a pretty solid team. I don't think you can ask Pierre-Luc Dubois and Jacob Chychrun and Dylan Strome to, again, put up the numbers that they put up last season. So that's where the regression goes. When everybody on your team has a basically a career year, you know there's going to be some regression. Alex Ovechkin, I'm not going to bet against him scoring 40 again, Sean. I won't do it. I think it's insane to do it. I will say I'm less inclined to say he will get there again. But so there's regression there, but I still think they're good enough with that. And the Columbus thing, I think, look, they played a lot on emotion last year. And that emotion ran out. They're a solid team. I worry a lot about their goaltending. I worry about their young guys taking the next step. I do. But the big thing that's holding me back with the Columbus Blue Jackets is their goaltending, because Elvis Merzlikins has been one of the worst number one goalies in the league the last 3 years. And that means he's one of the worst among the greatest in the world right now, obviously, because he's one of the top 32 in the world, but he hasn't been one of the top 32 in this league, and that's what matters, and that's what scares me.
I think their goaltending is going to be better, but to go back to Washington, I think their regression is going to be so bad, I don't have them in the playoffs.
Fair. So I have the New York Rangers fourth in the division. I think the bump they'll get from Mike Sullivan, I think you're going to see an improvement across the board. The Gavrikov addition for the New York Rangers is big. He's just a quiet, predictable player who will settle everything down. He did it for the LA Kings last year. He will do it for the Rangers this year. I think it'll help Adam Fox get back to closer to what we expect Adam Fox to be, and they have the goaltending. In fact, I joked with Mike Sullivan at one of his press conferences early in training camp. I said, when's the last time you went through a press conference in training camp and did not get asked about your goaltending? And he said, it's been a long time. And nobody asks about the goaltending in New York because Igor Shesterkin is that good.
But he wasn't last year.
No, the team was bad. The team had a bad mix, Sean. So it was a bad mix. They didn't play good. They were so bad against the rush. And I think he played victim to that as well. He fell victim to that as well. So I have them coming up to four. I actually think Columbus is probably in that five range in that division, with the Islanders battling out five there, and then, you know, 7-8 is Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I pretty much see it the same. I don't see either Philly or Pittsburgh making that huge jump that I think both teams hope they're going to make. I think they're at least a year away. You know, Pittsburgh's put themselves in a place where I don't think it's reasonable, right? They're doing that rebuild on the fly. They're trying to help, you know, one more time with Sid and Malkin and all of that. I just don't see it taking this year.
Yeah, I don't either. They're going to be a story. We're going to be talking about them at different points of the season based on those three guys, not what the team is doing on the ice, what the team is having to do off the ice, and where things go with there. All right, so what about the Atlantic? I'll tell you where I got it in the Atlantic, and I know the Barkov injury impacts the Panthers, but I don't think it drops them 20 points or anything like that in the regular season. This is still a team that's really good. I don't have them first. I have Tampa Bay first, but I do have Florida second, Toronto third, the same top three for me in that division. And then I got Ottawa fourth, and the Rangers and Ottawa as wild card teams in the Eastern Conference. And somebody will, you know, you may or other people will be like, what about Montreal? Montreal's supposed to be that team like the Ottawa Senators did last year, and they did last year, continuing to build, continuing to build. To be honest with you, Sean, I think it was too soon for the Canadiens, and I think they do regress.
Well, I don't. I have them third. It's Tampa, Toronto, Montreal for me. You look at that Montreal team, they're good in goal. You know, I think Sam Montembeault is an underrated goaltender. You know, he's in the conversation for one of the three Canadian goalies. That's a pretty deep pool. So, you know, and then they're young guys, like, too early. Like, they were the guys that drove the bus down the stretch last year and drove the bus in the playoffs. I think Marty St. Louis instills this confidence and the swagger in all of his players that he played with. And I think Demidoff is going to be a beast this year. You know, what you think that the guys that were so good last year are going to regress to the point where they're not good enough to get in the playoffs? I think that's a tough sell, man.
It is a tough sell, but sometimes you got to go out on a limb, right? So, and that's where I'm going here with Montreal, because I do like the team. I covered them in the playoffs last year. I liked what I saw. They did lose, but you know, they weren't quite ready for it last year, but they were still dangerous. They definitely gave Washington a run in each of those games. I worry about the rest of the league. You know how it goes, right? So when a team takes a big jump and it's a younger team, and it takes a jump ahead of probably where their own expectations were, then what happens is the rest of the league starts to figure them out. So now you've got to readjust. That's how it goes, and that's what builds winners, right? And I do my concern is in the readjustment for the Montreal Canadiens as the rest of the league figured them out, because it's still a young team, and I think last year was a step or two ahead of where they thought they were going to go. This is the year they thought they would be competing for a playoff spot, and I think they will, but with the I expect improvement from the Rangers, and I think Washington doesn't drop that much. I think Ottawa is still right there. Florida doesn't drop. Tampa doesn't drop. Toronto doesn't drop. Carolina's really good. New Jersey, really. Somebody's got to drop. So I think it's the young team that drops.
Yeah, well, I have Florida as a wild card, and I have Detroit as a wild card. We're finally going to celebrate the Iser plan. Oh, it's going to come to fruition.
We'll see. I don't buy that.
But they're going to be the second wild card, and they're going to be playoff fodder. Yeah.
I don't buy that. We'll see.
You gotta have hope. And when you get down to those teams, right? It the margins are so fine, and you're kind of throwing things at a wall and seeing what'll stick. I just, you know, I look at some of their talent, and I'm like, it's got to stick, you know. And if Quick can stay healthy, Gibson. I think he can be Gibson. Yeah, Quick's in New York.
Quick's in New York.
If he can stay healthy, like, he's a really good goalie. And I know everybody's going to go, oh, well, go look at the numbers. You could put Martin Brodeur in Anaheim for the last 5 years, and he would be a below average goalie.
Yeah.
They were giving up grade A chances. There's a reason that Quick was always hurt. He was contorting himself in positions that aren't known to mankind because he was breaking up or trying to break up 3-on-1s on an almost nonstop basis.
Yeah. You still think Quick is Gibson, which is amazing.
I do. They're the same player.
Sometimes I got to do it. Anyway, let's go west quickly here. Because I don't – listen, top three in the Central, in order, I have Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado. What do you got?
Colorado, Winnipeg, Dallas.
All right. So same top three, just a little bit of a different order. And the top three in the Pacific, I have Vegas, Edmonton, Calgary in order. Where are you?
L.A., Edmonton, and Vegas.
Okay, here's my boldest prediction. I don't have L.A. in the playoffs. I didn't like it. Anything that I saw from them at the end of the playoff series last year. I worry about that team. And here's the thing. I wonder, And it's bold because the fear of my bold prediction going the wrong way for me, and I mean, listen, I wish the best to the LA Kings. It's not anything that is that the bump they'll get from Andrei Kopitar's last season might be enough to push them, right? But I don't know that they can. Are they going to get the same type of season out of Darcy Kemper as he got last season? You know, like, are they? They lose Gavrikov. That's a big loss for them. Kopitar's in his last season. I don't see like superstar value there. I just don't think the LA Kings are the team that everyone is making them out to be. So they're my boldest prediction to not make the playoffs. I like Calgary taking a bump up. I like Dustin Wolf. I think that some of their younger guys are ready to take a step too. And to be honest with you, Utah is the team that I'm really watching in the Western Conference. It's time for the Utah Mammoth. They have a home. I talked to Bill Armstrong, and he was saying that on day one of training camp was the first time he fully felt like a general manager, not just a guy who was trying to move a lot of pieces around, right? This was a team now with a home, and I like Utah. I love Clayton Keller. I think he's going to have a huge season for them, and St. Louis is sticking in the wild card for me. So I don't have Minnesota in either. I don't have Minnesota or L.A. So you take some bold predictions here.
Yeah, well, I have Minnesota in as a wild card with Calgary. I think Calgary is going to take a step. Do I think that the L.A. Kings are the best team in the Pacific Division right now? No, I don't. But we're predicting how the season's going to end. And the one thing I know is that the young man sitting in the GM chair, Ken Holland, this isn't going to be the same team. When we get to the trade deadline, it will not be the same team. I think he understands what the Kings need to be successful. I think they're going to give Anze Kopitar every opportunity to have a going away party for the ages. I think they owe it to him. Within reason, and Kenny Holland has never been shy about making moves. And he's not there to safeguard the Kings for the next several years. He's not building a team like some of these other GMs are in Pittsburgh and like Detroit has for years. That's not his mandate. This isn't a long-term project for him.
It's win right now.
So I think LA is going to be a far different team by the end of the year, and I think they're going to be far better than they already are. And you could argue that they've been better the last couple of years than fate's given them, because just like Carolina, they've run into an all-time team.
Yeah.
In Edmonton.
4 years in a row to the Oilers.
But last year was ugly, and I think they live with that for a long time. They could have beat, and they should have beat, the Oilers, and I think that sits with them, and that motivates them all year.
We'll see. That's why it's a bold prediction. Quickly, before we get out of here, let's run through. We're doing trophy trackers next week on NHL.com.
Wait.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus. I have not taught you anything.
No. All right. Forget about trophy trackers. We'll do that next week.
Quicken Gibson, and you're going to walk away from predictions without picking the Stanley Cup winner? I'll take my faux pas over your faux pas any day.
Yes, that was really, really bad. Okay, you get the floor. Who do you got? Stanley Cup final, Stanley Cup winner?
Carolina and Vegas are in the final. Okay. Nice easy travel series.
Nice easy travel, yeah, sure. And who wins?
Carolina finally gets over the hump and wins, and Sebastian Aho's the MVP. Our predictions, by the way, you don't have to write all these down. They will run on NHL.com on Sunday.
Okay. I don't mind that. Sean, I'm not going to argue with you on that prediction. I think it's a good one. Listen, I'll be honest with you. I'm stunned. I thought I was going to have a debate with you on this one. I'm not going to, but that's not my prediction. I do have Vegas in the Stanley Cup final. I have them playing the New Jersey Devils in the Stanley Cup final. Good travel, by the way. easier travel, Newark to Vegas. Lots of flights, by the way. And I do have Vegas winning it and Mitch Marner as the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. So you have Carolina Vegas. I've got New Jersey Vegas. We both like the teams out of the Metro, and we both like Vegas. Vegas winning it, Carolina winning it. Marner for me, Aho for you. We disagree on some predictions, but that's okay. I think I have bolder predictions than you do, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
Let's put a little tomahawk at the Golden Ooh. Steer on it.
All right. We could do that. A tomahawk at the Golden Steer in Las Vegas in the Stanley Cup final. Well, what's the bet? I mean, we're both saying Vegas is going to be in.
Who gets more right?
Who gets more right? All right. It's on. But when they're playing the New Jersey Devils in Vegas, you're buying.
Fair enough.
All right. There we go. All right. All right. It's a bet. Who gets more of our all the division playoff predictions correct? Now you got to listen to that episode, to the last episode of the season two, the regular season at least, and then we'll go into the playoffs. But this next week we'll do.
You got to listen to every episode.
Every Wednesday. That is our schedule this season. Every Wednesday, the NHL at the Rink podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, that's when we will be available to you. And if it's not going to be on a Wednesday, we will let you know through our social media and all over the place. You will know. But every Wednesday for the NHL at the Rink podcast, I think we hit a home run with our first episode here, Sean.
What day is the podcast going to be on, Dan?
I believe it's Wednesday, just to let you know.
Because I wasn't sure.
Just to let you know. Got to hammer home that point as well. And you know where we can get it, right, Sean?
You can get it anywhere you get your podcast.
There you go. There you go. So we hit a home run in this one. Lot of fun. Regular season starts soon. Tuesday night, triple header on ESPN. And I'll be at Madison Square Garden for it. Looking forward to it. Until then, enjoy the rest of the preseason hockey.